Kathy Svitina, and this is The Efficiency Code, your guide to unlocking peak performance in finance and procurement. Listen as we decode the strategies of top industry leaders who are redefining efficiency and optimization. From spend management to lean operations, discover how to achieve more with less. Join us as we crack the code to sustainable growth. And my guest today is Julio Martinez, and I'm super excited that he is here because Julio is a dynamic and experienced leader with extensive experience in scaling organizations and enhancing operational efficiency. He is the CEO of Abacom, a powerful FP&A software company, and he leads the charge in empowering finance teams to make smarter decisions and optimize performance through technology and collaboration. And I love that. With a career spanning leadership roles in finance, ops, and technology, Julio has worked with global teams to streamline processes, drive efficiency, and deliver strategic growth in fast-paced industries. Since founding Abacom, he has been dedicated to transforming how finance teams operate, leveraging innovative tools and lean principles to help companies grow efficiently, all while driving sustainable success in today's fast-paced business environment. Welcome to the show, Julio.
Kathy, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited you're here because you come from such a such an interesting background. You were in finance, you were in FP&A, and now you are actually on the vendor side. You are offering FP&A software for companies. So it's going to be an interesting discussion because you were in people's shoes, in leader's shoes, when they were trying to figure out their FP&A issues. And now your tool is fixing that. So you're both on the vendor and on the procurement side. But first, let me ask this. What does sustainable growth mean to you?
And I love this question because I think FP&A needs to be all about propelling sustainable and efficient growth. In my mind, is delivering very healthy unit economics and having very strong business foundations. Right, and this is more at the strategic level, what it means to me, unit economics that are very healthy, and obviously the pillar of, generally speaking, having a sound business foundation. But hey, I'm a finance guy, right? So I am very passionate about corporate finance. I am a big freak of value investment. I spent many years following the best. And if you ask me, it truly means free cash flow. Right. So there are no shortcuts. So a sustainable business is the one that predictably generates a wholesome amount of free cash flow and has a very healthy free cash flow margin. So ARR growth, revenue growth, that's all great. EBITDA, whatever, free cash flow is what truly matters.
I like that. You came from a very financy side. And,
I'm biased. I'm biased. I know. I'm not a nerd.
You know, since you've been in finance for so long, what is one of the hidden costs that finance teams are paying, but they don't realize that they're doing that in terms of their efficiency?
Finance teams are oftentimes very constrained when it comes to capacity. I think in today's market, what I've identified is that we in finance have not done the best job in embracing technology and streamlining processes to make sure we keep up at the pace that the market and the growth of companies requires. So when I look at revenue functions or when I look at even HR, you know, even in the corporate function, like I see some other teams that have embraced technology and new software earlier or that have understood very well how critical it is to streamline your processes and potentially change management within the organization. I think where finance really shines is in talent density. So finance is very often a function that has very high talent density, accomplished people, sophisticated, very well educated, typically ambitious. They want to have an impact. But oftentimes the inertia of the inner processes, some companies that don't still see finance as a strategic function, but as a back office function, there are a number of reasons behind, some factors holding back finance teams to be more impactful in the company's strategy and sustainable growth. And that's usually not embracing technology, not rethinking your processes. So still sinking time in manual tasks, not having access to the operational metrics that matter, not being close enough to the strategy and the business. So all these factors that, you know, really anchor you or drag you and make you remain as a very operational function.
And, you know, there is a new trend, and obviously AI is everywhere these days. And I'm curious, from your perspective, how do you think that AI is going to change this in the future of finance?
Massively. I'm convinced that massively. So the reality is that today, LLMs particularly are not very good at numbers. So that's a reality and a technology constraint, if you will. They're obviously very good at some other things. But hey, we are maybe 12, 18, maybe 24 maximum months away from those models to become extremely good and proficient at numbers as well. So that wave is coming. That wave is coming for sure. So today, if you test models, usually they will not give you a better forecasting than more traditional ML machine learning models. So still they are a little bit lagging behind. Still they need high volumes of data for them to have a good accuracy. But that's improving very fast. And improving very fast, we're talking here month by month, right? We are testing them all the time. And month by month, they improve. Like, we are expecting a very important release in Q1 from, you know, one LLM purpose build for symbolic numbers or for symbolic language numbers. And it can be transformational. So my point is, it's obviously happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Finance, maybe it's not the forefront this time. So we see use cases a bit more developed, but that wave is coming. So I would be ready to surf the wave already and start getting your board and ready to paddle and pop up.
Yeah, start getting ready. So in terms of finance workforce, do you think that there is going to be a switch in what finance is actually going to be able to do with this future AI tool? Or is there just going to be less appetite for finance talent out there because the machines are going to be able to take over, you know, some of the basics of the financial analysis and reporting and all of that? How do you think that's going to plan into the future of this field?
I think it's definitely both. So I think that we will see tremendous efficiency in everything that is a bit more repetitive. And I would say that accounting is coming first, but of course, classification of transactions. So accounts payables, accounts receivables, there are certain areas that will come first. And that's a reality. And there is amazing technology already being built in those spaces. And we've built a part of it already in our software, and we see how impactful it can be, right? So that is happening for sure. And like it or not, finance functions will be able to grow more efficiently themselves in a more linear way. So imagine your company multiplies by two growth, headcount growth, for instance. Maybe finance, you just need to multiply it by 1.5, potentially, right? So we are talking about this level of efficiency. Then I think finance teams, at the same time, strategic finance teams, will be more empowered to be impactful at the strategic level. So we're talking here about surfacing insights at a faster speed, recognizing better patterns in data, and increasing forecast and budgeting accuracy. So definitely that's going to happen sooner than we think.
Yep. And I want to go back into how you said that you, in the tool that you have, Abacom, you're actually starting to implement the AI in there as well. And I was wondering if you have any use cases of how is that actually being used on the ground with finance? How are they being more efficient by using the tool and the AI that is available to them through your tool at this point?
Yeah, we have amazing use cases that we've built in the platform, and we continue investing and have a very ambitious roadmap. But today it's live in the platform, and we've been investing in this for a long time now. Because let's take a step back. So AI is maybe, you know, a little bit more recent, if you want, or it's mainstream more recently. But machine learning has been around for a long time, and it has been broadly applied to finance use cases for many, many years, right? So since we launched the company over 5 years ago, one of our first use cases was already ML enabled. So we were using machine learning to help customers drive better pacing. Basically, on day 3-4 of the month, you already can very accurately predict how that month is going to finish based on historical data, right? And those machine learning models were already outperforming any regression analysis or more classic ways of performing the same calculation. So that has been there for a long time. And you know,
yep.
that is a reality, right? That's best finance teams had already that foundation, that layer. So some others didn't, but some the best in class already used that. AI is unlocking value in another more broader scope of areas. So for instance, in our solution, you can just click a button and have a full written down report on any dimension, any graph, any table, any data point, your P&L, your balance sheet, or what's going on in this market with this product, right? And so instead of wasting your time describing data, like you already have a very, very good draft of what's going on. And of course, you're still, you know, accountable for that information.
Yep.
So yeah, it's AI generated, like same that in ChatGPT. Yeah, you want to take a look and edit a few things before you make it public and send it to your board of directors, right? But it's already a huge time saver. At the same time, for instance, we have AI-enabled anomaly detection. So when you have huge volumes of data, transactional detail, we identify patterns in data that they are signaling that something is off, right? And these are going to send notifications to different stakeholders depending on the workflows that you want to set up. That was less accurate in the past, right? And now,
for example, if accounting puts a journal entry in reverse, and they really shouldn't be doing that, or someone just adds an extra zero, and right now you have 5 million in there, what really shouldn't be, your tool will be able to figure that out.
Exactly. So that would be a very clear example, or excess travel expenses, or a potential anticipated shortcoming in revenue. So if your total revenue target is X, but then you know AI is forecasting or understanding your churn, your expansion, your new ARR, your contraction, and it's sending signals that, hey, like something is off. And maybe your connection with Salesforce was not updated, or maybe, you know, it can be technical, or it can be actually, yeah, you better take a look at it and have a conversation with your CRO because something is going on if you didn't have it yet. So anomaly detection is very clear. I think another time saver that we use a lot is the AI classifier. And finance teams oftentimes spend a lot of time manually classifying transactions that are coming from the ERP or other solutions, right? Cleaning that data and classifying transactions, and that's extremely tedious. Mm-hmm. And I've done it, and not fun.
No, so, it isn't.
Not fun. So you feel very intimately connected with monkeys at that point in your day. So definitely automating that to over 99% accuracy, and everything is automated. And so on, right? Obviously, AI forecasting, very powerful. There we are enabling customers to choose the algorithm that they want. So you can go with ML Classic, you know, Prophet or some others. You can go Arima, you can go, you know, obviously LLMs as well. Here is where the technology, like still you need to fine tune, right? So still it's not super advantageous to use potentially AI yet, but it's happening and it's evolving fast.
I really like this, and I can see a lot of potential. And one of the things, you know, as a CFO now, as a fractional CFO, I used to be in FP&A world. What I would love to see happening is that there's a lot more data integration, because right now when we were talking, it's a lot of the data is still coming from the accounting side, maybe some from some kind of Salesforce. But what I would love to see is we have accounting data, if we have sales data, if we have operational data and any other data centralized, and then the machine learning takes it over and starts to predict based on what is going to happen in the future, based on these leading indicators that are happening in the sales and operations versus just looking at the lagging indicators of the accounting.
You're preaching to the convert, and it's a dream, right? And this is what has led us to build Abacum and this software and this company. We are 100% convinced that finance teams need to become and drive operational performance. So we think of the CFO as the operational performance agent within the organization. And we are, you know, very extreme and very vocal about it. And this is what we are building in the software, right? So, and it's very important that finance teams have all the metrics that matter from a business perspective at their fingertips. So this is not just the accounting data that, of course, you know, you close your month and you'll get your accounting data. Those are always lagging indicators. If you want to be strategic, if you want to be close to the business, you need to have your fingers in all the operational metrics that matter. You need to connect with wherever they live, right? So Looker, Tableau, Salesforce, HubSpot, Bamboo HR, any HIRS you want, right? So you need to, the underlying data warehouse, wherever they are, but anything that is moving your business plan, your P&L, you need to have real-time access, and you need to have meaningful conversations with your stakeholders based on that data. Of course, when you have that single source of truth, when you have that consolidation of operational KPIs and financials, and you understand those correlations and you know the trade-offs that happen within those, yeah, then with AI on top of it, it can be a very powerful game-changer approach to delivering strategic finance and FP&A.
Yeah. And I always say that everything that happens in the business eventually ends up on the finances plate. So the more you know, the more data you have, the better off you will be, because you will see these indicators. Hey, something's happening. We gotta go take a look at it way before it ends up on your plate. And then you can actually do something about it versus just reporting and say, oh, we were 500,000 over budget here because something happened. It's like, yeah, great. But how do we actually fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again?
100%.
So once we, hopefully this brave new world, you know, once it starts happening, how do you think that is going to change the skill set level that finance needs to have, especially to be more strategic?
So definitely technology, right? So we all need to become more tech savvy and understand better, you know, technology options. I think when I'm a bit older than I would like to be, and when I got trained in finance, you know, the technical skills were very clear, and it was your modeling in Excel, right? And I spent many years in investment banking and then also operational roles, and then back then technical skills were considered, yeah, basically modeling, right? Becoming a nerd in a programming language that is Excel, right? It's nothing else than a programming language. Very simple one, I would say. Today, we need to understand finance teams need, you know, obviously, we need to do our homework and bridge that technology gap that we oftentimes have. And I see the most impactful FP&A leaders out there being very technology savvy. They understand APIs very well. They understand data flows. They understand how to integrate and get to that single source of truth. And then they know how to manipulate and clean data in a very automatic way. And of course, you can do a little bit of that with macros in Excel, but they understand the power of an automated ETL. And they master that and scale very fast. So definitely, in terms of a skill gap, what I see and what I have, you know, mentioned to a lot of finance professionals that are maybe luckily younger than me is get your technicals, your new technicals, right. There are plenty of options out there to really bridge that gap of technology.
I think for me, it would be one of the things that it's very going to be even more important than it is now. It's going to be critical thinking, because even though machines can take over, you still need someone to oversee the machines and to figure out whether something is still off. I think there's still going to be a market for that. And it's definitely, even though you don't have to do the analysis, because the machine is going to be doing it, you still need to know how it's done and the critical thinking behind it so that you understand that it's done well. That's my perspective on it.
I love it. I love it. You're totally right. So when we talk to, you know, obviously my point on technical skills is, you know, how do you leverage technology to your own benefit? But you're absolutely right. I think our success in the future is to be truly humans, right? So now we have the luxury to outsource a lot of the repetitive monkey machine work, right? And we can outsource the machine monkey work more effectively than before, and it's way more reliable, and it's becoming more and more reliable. Hopefully then we can stay truly human, which is probably our edge against a machine, and you know, master that critical thinking. Think of it, even accounting teams, right? Where there is a lot of noise, and you know, AI is coming from this function, and we'll see, right? We'll see. Like, I think we tend to overestimate the short term, and so we'll see what happens. But definitely, you are signing those accounts, right? Mm-hmm. The CFO is signing those accounts, right? And you are. You have a very serious liability on those, right? So definitely you want amazing humans with a lot of critical thinking, checking everything, right? So maybe in the more repetitive tasks, yeah, that can be automated away. By the way, that has happened for many years now. So it's nothing very, very exceptionally new. And definitely you want humans, you know, providing that strategic insight. Who is going to partner in the business? Who truly understands the strategy? Who truly understands competitive evolution? Who is checking competitive products or go-to-market motions? Who is puzzling all that together? Of course, for those analyses, actually AI can help you as well. But, you know, I think we are not yet so close to people with 20 years of experience, understanding of this, all these moving pieces and making strategic decisions, partnering with the business, understanding what's going on in the different departments, understanding your competitive edge, what's going on, what's not going on. So yeah, so to your point, critical thinking, I love it. Thank you for that refreshing perspective.
You know, we talked a lot about the technology, and you have, as I've said at the beginning, you have such a unique position because you were a finance leader and now you are a SaaS provider, and especially someone who works closely with finance leader. What is your advice to the CFOs and to the finance teams that are trying to optimize their tech investments and looking at this from a side and saying, I don't know, should we do this? Like, how much tech do we need right now in this work that we're doing?
I love this question. So, and you're right. So I've been in finance many, many years before moving into technology, and I come from finance, and now both my co-founder and I have a lot of industry expertise, and we are building the product we wish we had. I still don't recommend our product to everybody, right? So yep. We want to solve very real problems. And, you know, if you don't have a problem, don't fix it, right? Don't do stuff to fix things that, you know, don't make them up. So I think you need to have a very real understanding of what's the business unit, or if you're in finance, right? What is the problem that you are trying to solve for? And a way that at least we internally reflect about it is, look, companies want to double the revenue, triple the revenue, 50% increase in revenue with a good number of efficiency metrics that, you know, you need to also deliver to generate that free cash flow that we spoke about before, right? So if you know you have the right talent density, if you've reviewed your processes and streamlined them, and then you understand that together with the right people and the right processes, technology can truly accelerate your impact, then it's a no-brainer. But in my mind, it all comes down to, you know, we cannot continue growing the corporate functions, or we cannot continue growing our cost base very linearly together with revenues. Today, we don't have that luxury in today's market dynamics, but also with technology, with the advent of AI, like it's going to be very difficult to sell that to investors and the market. So I expect increased efficiencies going forward. And those that are not truly critical about, hey, do I have the best people I can get in my team, really? Or am I a bit complacent? Do I really have the best people? Have I really thought through these processes? Am I ambitious? I'm pushing change fast enough? Because oftentimes, you know, well, it's fine. Like, we'll review this in a couple of quarters. We are busy. No, are you pushing it? Are you really pushing it? Are you at your best? Are you top of the game in driving change, in becoming more efficient? Are you ambitious? And then once you solve that as well, of course, the layer of technology is in today's market very obvious, right? That the right investments in technology are really going to multiply your team. And then you can really, I've seen companies doubling revenue, like no additional hiring in finance. Tripling revenue, no additional finance hires. you buy some technology, you review some talent, you make sure you have the people you need, and that's it. And I think it's very important to remember that, right? As business leaders in finance, in procurement, in any function, I think in the past, maybe, you know, when I was at the beginning of my career, I guess, whenever, I saw more leaders placing their ego and their sense of importance in how many people they had in their team.
Yeah.
Right. So like my worth is that I have a, you know, 30 people finance team, right? Or a 100 people finance team. I'm a big boss.
You're building the empire. Yep.
You're building your empire, right? I'm a, you know, I'm a boss here, right? Like I have all this big team, you know? I think best leaders today just understand that the leaner your function is, given the same level of impact, the better. So your job is really to make sure that, yeah, you're still delivering the same value to the CEO, to the board of directors. You are enabling them with the decisions so that they become the best possible capital allocators. But still, you're running a very lean and efficient finance function. And this is the nut that in finance we need to crack.
And I really like that you came also with the processes and the people, because a lot of times what I have seen, especially in you know, these multi-billion dollar corporations that I've been in, there's a process issue, but then we throw in more people to fix that. Obviously, that doesn't fix that. And then we say, well, it's not, I guess the people are not really solving it. Let's throw in some technology. Where essentially, really, you need to go down to the core and figure out, is this even a process we should be doing? What are we really trying to do here? And is there actually a better way to do this process? And you might just have to fix the process without any extra people or even without extra technology or new technology.
100%. It's a classic. Yeah, you're right. So nothing to comment. Bodies to the problem, software to the problem, whatever, like throwing spaghetti to the wall. And you know, but yes, sometimes it's more, you know, hey, critical thinking, you said it before.
And let's go back into, you know, as we talked about you having a company right now that it's offering FP&A solution to companies. And I always, because you have such a unique position right here. And I really want to ask you, when you are negotiating with procurement leaders, what is the one piece of advice that you would give to them when they're trying to negotiate terms with SaaS companies like yours?
I had a very refreshing conversation recently with a procurement leader that I really rated. So we were in this sales process. I don't know much about procurement, right? So like this is my disclosure. So besides the basics, right? I'm not an expert. Finance is my domain. Procurement, you know, I see from the outside. And sometimes from the outside, it's difficult to understand the dynamics.
Yep.
Right. So yeah, you understand some of the incentives, you understand high level their goals, but it's difficult to go deeper and to understand, you know, what's a good procurement team, what's not so good procurement team, and what they should be prioritizing in more sophisticated companies, what's a strategic procurement and all those things. And I had a very refreshing conversation. My team happened to be in that negotiation, right? And then at some point I decided to jump into a call and, you know, understand and you know, make sure I was following what was going on in that process. And it was very refreshing because we ended up talking for a long time, way longer. You know, the classic call that, you know, you have half an hour and then you spend, you know, over an hour talking and understanding. And it was fantastic because his main point was focus on value, not on price. And maybe this is very, you know, well known in the industry or for the audience, but I think the main point that he was making is, yeah, I truly understand the business pains that the business unit is trying to solve. I fully understand the business need from a very fundamental perspective. So I've done my homework. I didn't stay shallow. And you know, the best procurement teams from what I saw will go very deep into understanding the business need that is arising and they understand very well the decision criteria as well. And then obviously from a go-to-market perspective, so the vendors also need to understand that very well. But procurement leaders that are strong and seasoned are the ones that push their teams to truly partner with the business to understand what matters, what's value, and what's the key decision criteria that is going to really unlock that value. Because oftentimes, and he was mentioning that, like more junior people are going to have these incentives to show up as the hero of the day, mentioning that, hey, we compressed the price and, you know, we created this artificial competitive tension by, you know, cornering all the vendors. And then, yeah, and we crashed the price, or we went with this very cheap provider because, you know, whatever. And then we are saving all this money to the company. And that's a vanity metric, right? Because yeah, this junior guy is showing up with, you know, with this vanity metric. But in reality, you know, for instance, in our space and our product is very complex from a software perspective. And then taking a commoditized view on it can really lead to a lot of damage and opportunity cost that you miss. So you don't want to create that tension and all of a sudden, for instance, force a decision to go with a cheaper provider, only to face 3-6 months later a failed implementation. Mm-hmm. Then you are throwing all these fees, you're throwing all this time, all this critical time that where you had to, you know, generate value. And then still, you know, you're back to square zero and you need to start all over again. And Kathy, we get these calls. Wow. I've been in conversations where, you know, some companies decided to go with a cheaper provider and 6 months later, they're calling us and they come with us. That procurement team, you know, probably didn't generate a lot of value. But somebody showed in the initial picture, like, yeah, I'm saving money to the company. In reality, you destroyed value because you didn't truly understand the business needs, the decision criteria, and you didn't go deep with vendors to understand what mattered. So you just came in last minute trying to, you know, generate some tension. At the same time, I think good procurement teams understand the concept of partnership.
And is this concept of being penny wise and pound foolish? It's like, yes, you have saved maybe, you know, $200,000, but have you really saved anything if the solution that you found wasn't really a solution? You have wasted your people's time. And now you're 6 months, 12 months down the line, and you have even a bigger problem now and the money that you wasted. It's just, it's a very short-term thinking.
I couldn't agree more, right? And it's very refreshing. And sometimes also I wonder, and I mentioned this to some clients, right? Hey, you can try to squeeze fees and I get it, right? Everybody wants a discount. I want a discount. I buy software. I buy a lot of software. I believe in technology. We scale our company very efficiently and I buy software. So I get it, right? I also want my discount. Yeah, fine. We all do the same thing. We play the same game. However, when you try to go too far into that journey, then how do you think your vendor is going to approach that partnership? Right? Because we all have unit economics to protect. And if you feel your vendor, your partner, you depend on their success, right? And if you feel them underinvested, underappreciated, do you think they are going to, in their need to protect their own economics, go the extra mile for you? Because we know, you know, in a partnership, it's not about, you know, the contractual point by point fulfillment of the contract. It's more the spirit of a partnership of mutual success. Do you think a partner that doesn't have their first share is going to be going beyond what they need to be doing in the implementation? Are they going to bring the best people? Who are they going to prioritize? Yeah. You know, we all have hundreds of customers, right? They have hundreds of customers. Who do we prioritize? Who is important? Who shapes our roadmap? Well, you know, the best partners. And it's not only about fees, right? Don't get me wrong, but the best partners that are also good partners for us are the ones shaping the roadmap, being in our customer advisory board, and generating that dynamic. So I think from a procurement perspective, it's also important. Hey, if this is mission critical for software, like instead of trying to get every penny from the table, maybe build a successful partnership that in 1 year, in 2 years, is going to generate all this value for this business unit. And Look, I think the art of this and the science of this is try to put numbers into it and try to understand how critical it is. But that would be my reflection.
Julio, the last question that I have for you, and, you know, we've talked a lot about value and the cost, but what is your number one tip for the CFOs when it comes to tackling the SaaS costs? Let's keep this in the cost area still.
Having very clear visibility on and a very good understanding of who is spending what is very critical, and it's the basic foundation that every finance team up there needs to be building. In many companies, different stakeholders, if you have a decentralized purchasing motion, right, with thresholds and stuff, like you know what happens, right? That this control happens, and then you have this diaspora. So, like, oftentimes we see finance teams that don't have that basics. You would say, hey, it's very easy, right? So, you know, just get a list and go one by one. Well, guess what? Like, many people don't have that list, and it takes a while to build it. I think a critical review of each provider is very helpful. And you need to, what we encourage finance teams to do, and what we do ourselves, is to go one by one, you know, once per year or something like that, to understand, you know, what are the motions in every contract, because sometimes, yeah, organizations grow and people come and go. And so you have this contract with I don't know how many seats, and all of a sudden you are sitting on a contract paying, I don't know, 300K on something. And in reality, you are using 70K. And that happens very often.
Yep.
And nobody's, you know, truly paying attention or really accountable for that, right? Unless you have a very built out and very conscious, aware, cost aware finance or procurement team that is really, you know, originating that. But in reality, you know, obviously we all like to do these cost savings exercises and reviews. And I would argue SaaS cost should be going down, back to your question. But anyway, that's my take. If anything, on the aggregate level, so winning products can go up, they command that, but over time competition will also pick up, but for some time they can command that premium, and we see that all the time. So on those, I think it's more going back to the business unit and understanding what is the real value that they are providing, and if there is any alternative that could make sense for them. And a classic is many finance teams, many sales teams use a lot of software typically, and maybe video recording, right, for calls. And there are some providers that are very expensive, and now you have like 20 copycats that are 1/10 of the cost, right? So this critical review on, man, the implementation of this is half a day. So the switching cost is close to zero.
Yeah.
And we can slice the cost by 10 times. So why don't we do it? So this active management and really changing the team, challenging the teams and breaking that inertia that we all have. I'm used to my emotions. I'm used to my software. Yeah, I'm not very tempted to be reviewing and you know, going through that friction unless somebody comes actually in my finance team tells me, Julio, you know, you're wasting money here, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, there's so many tools out there, and just it's hard to like keep pulse on what is the new and the latest video tool that might actually be cheaper. And a lot of times, just because it's cheaper, it doesn't mean that it's actually going to be around for much longer. So especially if you use tools that are so important to the sales team, like video might be, switching over with an unknown provider might be a problem as well, because you don't know if they're going to be around.
Yeah, yeah. Vendor risk. And it's very real.
Yeah. Well, Julio, this has been a lovely conversation. Thank you so much for being on a podcast. It's been a real pleasure.
Kathy, thank you so much.